Hi, it's Doon here, your host and hype girl. And before we dive into today's episode, I want you to take a hot second to reflect. What's that passion, unique experience, or knowledge you have itching to be shared with the world? For me, it's always been about guiding you and cheerleading incredible women to start your businesses. So what's your thing? You see, everyone's got something they excel at, something they just can't stop talking about. And it turns out that one of the best ways to monetize those passions is through sharing that thing with the world as a digital course product. My life's work has been to chat with more than 600, 7, 8, and 9-figure e-commerce founders. And it's through those conversations that have led me to creating a foolproof playbook and my go-to guide for early-stage founders in the form of my first ever digital program, E-commerce Fundamentals. But it wouldn't have been possible without Thinkific. The beauty of this platform lies in its simplicity. Cute templates and a super easy to use editor. No coding headaches, no tech-induced stress, just pure focus on what matters most, the content. So if you've ever been curious about building a course to teach your passion, this is the way to do it. The genuine support from the Thinkific team turns it from this lonely, confusing headache into the most fulfilling and easy project. Go to the link in my show notes to get a free trial on me. This is Jash Mehta for Female Startup Club. Hello and welcome back to the show. It's Doon here, your host and hype girl. Today on the show, we're learning from Jash Mehta, founder of Pop & Bottle. Pop & Bottle was inspired when Jash and her close friend Blair made the move from London to California and had a meeting for their daily ritual, the morning latte. As coffee lovers who also prioritized health, the two friends asked themselves why nothing on the grocery store shelves met their standards. The clean label, dairy-free, no refined sugar, and organic. Jash co-founded Pop & Bottle from a genuine desire to create quality coffee and tea beverages that she wanted in her own life and make them available to the millions of people who share in her passion for clean, healthy, high-integrity products. In this episode, we talk through her early blueprint, which is still super relevant to today, and how she expanded from 30 stores to 100 stores and then on to 10,000 stores. So if you're in the food and beverage industry, grab your pen and paper and settle in for an episode that is packed with so many valuable insights. Ah, I'm so excited for you. And today is your last chance to join us inside Magic before we close the doors to founding members and go back to our regular pricing. It's inside Magic that you can meet women like Jash and ask direct questions in an intimate setting. You can connect with other founders who are pre-launch or are in the early stages of building their brand and access tons of resources and SOPs and frameworks that you can implement into your life and business today. So if you've been excited about joining us, go to femalestartupclub.com/magic with a J. And when you sign up, you'll be prompted to book in your one-on-one call with me so I can get to know you better. But for now, let's get into this episode. This is Jash for Female Startup Club.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Josh, hi. Welcome to the Female Startup Club podcast.
Hi, Dune. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to be here. You're tuning in from San Francisco today. What's it like?
I am. Despite my English accent, I'm actually in San Francisco. I have been here for 10 years. It is cold, but still beautiful today.
Still beautiful. Have you got any wins or oh shit moments that you want to share, vent, rant about?
I'm sure I will as we get into this discussion. But no, it's a good day. It's the afternoon. It's a nice peaceful day. I have a great view outside my window. And yeah, I'm excited to chat to you.
Amazing. For anyone who might not know who you are yet, do you want to give us a little bit of an introduction into who you are and what the brand is?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm Josh Mehta. I'm CEO and co-founder of a organic plant-based latte brand called Pop and Bottle. We're available in the US and thousands of grocery stores like Whole Foods and Walmart and Sprouts. We've been going for about 7 years now. I started with my co-founder. And yeah, it's been a beautiful, challenging, interesting, fun, terrifying journey. I love what I do.
As it always is, it's a roller coaster. So I'm told.
It's a roller coaster.
So I've heard.
As you know.
As I know, yeah. Where do you like to start your story? I know you launched around 2015, but where does kind of the light bulb moment happen for you and your co-founder? And what is that early kind of moment into starting Pop and Bottle?
Yeah. It's so interesting looking back, because I think in any journey you have these pivotal moments, and we've definitely had, you know, over the last 7 years, we've definitely had several of them, and each one has kind of taken the business into a different trajectory. And so we started in 2015 in that bootstrapped, very organic, very steep learning curve. I mean, the learning curve is still steep, but it was kind of very hands-on back then. That was kind of phase one of the business. And then it kind of moved into the next phase where we had a few more resources, et cetera, et cetera. So, but I can start in the bootstrap phase because I think that's the most interesting. And
let's start there. We love that phase.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's helpful. I can kind of help start with, you know, how we got into this and why we do what we do and what that looked like. So, you know, for me personally, I was coming at entrepreneurship from a personal journey of seeing my mom being an entrepreneur my whole life. So, and I know you have kind of a similar story. My mom was a kind of a big part of the role model that showed me what it looked like to have a female leader, a female business owner. So I knew I had that entrepreneurship gene in me, and I was coming to the table with that from a young age. But I just didn't know what that looked like. What was the business? Where did I want to spend my time? And there's a little bit of serendipity, actually, in the way we started. I moved to San Francisco in my 20s for personal reasons. So it's a big move from London. And I moved to a city which was, you know, 80% tech scene. But actually the part that drew me in was not the tech industry, it was the food industry. And, you know, London being a big city, great food scene, but removed from kind of the agricultural farm to table aspect of food. And that's what I saw when I came to California. So I arrived and suddenly there was all this beautiful farm to table eating that I was experiencing. There were these beautiful California farmers markets where I was buying my produce. The grocery stores were these amazing health food stores selling things I'd never heard of. And it was just such an interesting kind of facet of California living that really captured me in. And it really started my interest in wellness and healthy eating. The serendipity of the story is that my co-founder, who was one of my best friends, happened to move to San Francisco for totally different reasons within 6 months of when I moved. So suddenly I arrived here, I'd left my career behind, and I had a space of time in kind of my career journey that was a break. And it was a forced break because I moved, but it was such a great time to just slow down and experience this new place, get to know it, explore my passions, and do it with a friend who was a very good friend. And so it started completely passion-based. We loved health and wellness. We started eating at these restaurants together. We started kind of jumping into a plant-based diet, seeing what that did to our bodies, how it felt, going to health food stores and understanding these ingredients and what they mean, watching documentaries. And yeah, it was just a kind of a really fun period of exploration. And then we would meet for coffee. We'd meet every day for coffee and talk about XYZ that we'd learn or XYZ that we were interested in. And suddenly we kind of realized that, you know, we've been putting wellness into every aspect of our lives and seeing how that felt. But this daily ritual that we loved, this daily activity that we did that was social, that we met, you know, it was community driven, we'd meet every day, wasn't actually very healthy. And especially, you know, especially 7 years ago when it was a lot harder to find great plant-based options. And, you know, you'd go for coffee and it would mostly be dairy. There's lots of added sugar in lattes. It was very hard to find organic coffee. It was very hard to find tea-based options. And suddenly we kind of had this moment where we wanted this ritual that we loved to just be more healthful. And we noticed that particularly in the grocery store space. So yes, you could go to your local coffee shop and craft something that was to your taste. But if you went to a grocery store, coffee in the grocery store was really about hypercaffeination. You know, it was more energy. It wasn't about ritual. It wasn't about delight. It wasn't about wellness. And we noticed that white space, and it was something we were doing every day. And that was really kind of a light bulb moment. We wanted to craft something that was delightful and delicious and healthful for us and build a beautiful brand around it that was meaningful to us and meaningful to others. So that was really the moment that kind of started us on this journey. The reality of it is that we had no food background, no beverage background, no CPG background. My co-founder was from a design background. I had an operational business background. And so we were coming at this industry really naive. And I think that has definitely its benefits. It has its challenges. You know, we had to learn a lot in a short period of time. But it has its benefits. You know, I think if we knew more, we maybe wouldn't have jumped into it as hard and fast.
You might not have started.
yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of how it started. And we really started small. We wanted to test the concept. We had no idea, did other people want this? Would they pay for it? Would they buy it twice? Would the decision maker in the grocery store, you know, think this is a good idea? Would they make space on their shelves for it? And so there was a lot to learn and a lot to test. And our goal, so the first milestone really was just, let's figure out how to make this in a way that is, you know, commercially viable. And then let's get it into 20, 30 stores and see what happens. The process of selling it was us literally going to these little grocery stores, asking to speak to the manager or the buyer and saying, hey, this is what we make. We should be interested in this. What's your feedback? And we learned a lot doing that.
And so at that time, you're on this kind of forced break because you've moved. Are you also going back into the industry, or are you kind of like, let's see how we go, when you are actually starting this business full time with the intention of just sticking with it full time?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was giving myself about 6 months to kind of figure out what life in California looked like for me. And so I think that's really in some ways important, because we're all on this treadmill, right? It's like we're doing this and then we're doing this and we're doing this and we want to be here by this age and, you know, whatever that looks like. And it's rare that we intentionally take a break in our lives. And I think for those who do, it's so wise. But for me, it wasn't so intentional. It was kind of forced because I'd moved. But it gave me this like period of time to just slow down and really be intentional about what I wanted to do next. And for me at the time, it was the two options for me were I'm going to go join a company and kind of further my skill set. And it was an exciting time to join tech and other things in San Francisco. Or it was like, actually, this is the perfect time to really think about if I do want to start a business and what that looked like for me. And I gave myself a period of time to test and learn and take some shots on goal and see what happened and what landed. And it was a very appropriate period of time to, you know, if things didn't work, if it didn't feel right, if my co-founder was not working and, you know, we had a great friendship, but maybe it wouldn't translate to a business partnership. It was just kind of a great time to test all of those things. And so, yeah, it was very open-ended. Like, let's try this. Let's see what happens. If we get to that next milestone, we'll keep going. And that has been the story of the last 7 years.
I love that. And just to further paint the picture, are you like making these products at home, or are you immediately kind of, you found a commercial kitchen? Like, what's the setup in those early bootstrapping moments?
Yeah. Let me paint some color.
Paint the picture.
So at the beginning, we're doing all the R&D in my little apartment in San Francisco. We bought a Vitamix. The first investment we made is $1,000 in a Vitamix, you know, our fancy blender. And that was kind of our big R&D purchase. And
wish I had one of those.
Yeah.
Love those.
They're great. It still works. It's in the museum of P&B. It was at this point just the earliest form of an idea, really. But we would, you know, find recipes. We were making our homemade plant-based milks. We were, you know, literally making almond milk in our kitchen. We weren't selling it, but we were doing all the R&D. And R&D is, you know, very basic at this point. And that's kind of how it started. We didn't go any further until we had
an assemblance of a product
that someone could taste, you know, be it friends and family, someone could taste and just give us feedback. We did that for a little while until we had,
I believe it was 5 different products that we had
got to a point where we thought, this is delicious, we love this, we have a recipe that we would buy at least every day, but let's see if it lands with others. I think it was Blair's birthday
in that year that we decided to have a friends and family tasting, and we invited 30 of our close friends and family. We had these big giant vats of lattes in different flavors, and we set them up, we made it look beautiful, and we had an iPad and a Google form, and we basically put together a questionnaire. Tell us, what's your favorite? Tell us what you liked, what you didn't like. Would you buy this again? How much would you pay? Just kind of basic questions to our audience of 30 friends. And in exchange, you know, come hang out with us. We'll serve you breakfast. We'll have a good time. We'll celebrate Blair's birthday, et cetera, et cetera. So that was kind of our first piece of feedback, our kind of first product trial, you know, in a safe environment with our friends. And then we used that to decide on 3 products. We're like, we have 5 that we love. We can't launch 5. It takes too many resources. It's too expensive. Nobody's going to give us 5 SKUs of shelf space in a grocery store. So let's use this exercise to pick the best 3
and really focus on those. So we used the results of our little mocked up survey, and we landed on 3
that we loved and that had the best feedback. And so that was kind of the R&D stage. Once we'd gone from there, then it was really, we had to learn about the regulation, the licensing. We got food service license ourselves.
And then we found a commercial kitchen not too far outside of San Francisco, where we could rent by the hour on the weekends and you know, physically make the product ourselves. So what the working week looked like in those early days for us is Monday to Friday, we would
sell, market, you know, work on strategy, design packaging, like all of those great things. And then on the weekend, we would run production and we would work in the commercial kitchen, make the product. Mondays, we would deliver everything. And Tuesdays to Fridays, we would do everything else.
What kind of like amount of money did you invest in that early stage to getting you to kind of like, you know, launch, I guess, where you have like those three products, you've kind of invested in the, like the setup of the company, the hiring of the commercial kitchen, getting licensed, that kind of thing. Like if you had to put a ballpark figure on the investment.
Yeah, it was about $10,000. So my co-founder and I both put about half of that in. And that was enough to get us on the ground, which, you know, might sound a lot to some, might sound not very much to others. For us, you know, at the time it was the amount that we were comfortable putting in to invest and really give it a little bit of a go, that felt comfortable to us and was enough for us to invest in our first round of packaging, do the business startup costs, the licensing, the regulation, produce our first round of products essentially.
And at that time, you know, you were obviously kind of going into this with the idea that you would see how it goes, bootstrap the business, but at some point you raise money. And I don't want to skip ahead too far in the process, but for you, I think it's an interesting moment to talk about because a lot of people kind of want to raise straight out of the gate. They want to raise early on and go right into it and think that that's the answer. But oftentimes bootstrapping it until you get to a point where you have to raise out of desperation or out of the need to scale or expand, you know, comes along. For you, were you ever thinking about raising at that point? Or what was that kind of like mental mindset around the bootstrapping to fundraising path?
You know, there's so many ways to do this. And when I look back, I don't know if we did it exactly right, but I also don't know if we were going to do it again, whether we do it differently. It was kind of the path we chose and it, you know, it worked. We've got here, but it probably slowed things down for sure. So I think that's always the trade-off. You know, resources always can help speed things up, but resources obviously come at a price. And so, you know, what is the right pace for you? And how much are you willing to, you know, give away in terms of equity or whatever it is to make that work? For us, kind of going back to us not being from the industry, and you know, the naivety that we talked about, I don't think that we really knew what it looked like to do this in a way that was really expedited. You know, if I was doing it again, now I really understand. I've zoomed out enough that I know that if I was to zoom back in, I would know how to do things a lot faster and I understand how to scale things a lot faster. But at the time, we didn't know that. And it's really important to us to get our hands dirty and learn. So we weren't looking to raise out the gate because we needed to have the confidence in ourselves and in the product to know that, you know, before we go out and ask others to support this, we need to know what we're doing. We need to know that we have X amount of data, that we understand what this looks like, that we have some metrics to show, et cetera, et cetera. And that took a little bit of time. So we were bootstrapped for a period of time.
But ultimately, it was also very apparent reasonably early on that we wouldn't really be able to be bootstrapped for that long unless we wanted this business to be, you know, very, very localized. I think if the ambitions were to do this kind of within a tight geography of San Francisco and do it in a very localized way, I think that we could have continued down that path. But I think there's a philosophical question that we had to ask us, which was, you know, why are we doing this? You know, what's the North Star? And if the North Star is to build this brand that touches a large geography of people, then we're going to have to raise some capital. We're going to need some support. You know, it's not a cheap business to build, you know, when you really, you know, you need scale in order to really build this at a geography that is meaningful. And so it was very apparent reasonably early that we would need to raise funding if that was the ambition. And it wasn't necessarily obvious to us that was the ambition day one. You know, it came with a few months of seeing the product sell, getting feedback and building our own confidence. You know, it's really the customer telling us, you should have bigger ambitions for this because actually we do want it. And then as we slowly increased our geography, it started to work in a bigger scale, in a bigger geography. And it's really been that process of feedback and those mini successes that have given us the confidence to go a little bit broader in our ambition.
Gosh, I love that. And I think it's, you know, it's such an important point you touched on, which is you really do need to prove out your concept first in the market to get that metric and data kind of analysis so that you can then figure out what the North Star is and what you want to do with it. Because obviously if the market isn't ready for that product or it's not quite right, then you don't want to invest money kind of that can go down the drain when you need to jiggle things to prove it out.
Totally. Yeah. And it's really rare that you put something out in the world and you've nailed every single thing the first time around, right? Like, I think some people might be extraordinary at product and design thinking to be able to do that. But the reality is that you really need a bunch of touch points, a bunch of people to experience your product with different preferences or, you know, whatever it is, to help you shape what is wanted of you in the world. And it's really healthy, I think, to be open to pivoting in those early days. I think if you're too much of a perfectionist about that, or you're too attached to that, you know, very first version that you made with your Vitamix in the kitchen, then there might be a missed opportunity. So giving yourself that time and being open to, you know, a potential pivot or the market guiding you, you know, for us was definitely really helpful.
Was there a lot of change in the beginning based on the feedback? Like, what were some of the things that people, you know, were telling you, we need it to be this or we need it to be that?
Yeah. Yes and no. I think one of the biggest ones that was, but it was probably the most transformative for our business, was this idea of really zeroing in on a few products that resonated the best. And so I kind of alluded to this in, you know, we had 5 recipes, we launched with 3. That sounds very small, but it was actually very, very important when you're starting a small business and you have limited resources. But the biggest thing about that was not just, you know, which are the 3 that taste the best, but it was really helping us better understand what problem we were solving for the world, or, you know, or for our friends or for our San Francisco community, whatever that was. And what we realized is, so I'll give a very specific example in our case. We had a selection of products that were coffee, tea, and uncaffeinated. We loved all of them. We used them at different points of the day. But as we looked at some of the early data and got the early feedback, the ones that were resonating the best were the ones that were taking the place in someone's life of their coffee. You know, it was the caffeinated, ritualistic products of the bunch. And so that's where we started. And that really helped us zero in on the fact that, well, who are we? We're a latte brand. That's what we want to be. And that's what we want to do really, really well. And that's what we want to be known for. And zeroing in on that was very helpful. It was really helpful so that we could focus on a limited number of products. It was very helpful because we could very clearly articulate from a brand and marketing perspective what we were selling and what we were hoping to improve for someone's lives. And so that, you know, that was an example of not necessarily a pivot, but a zooming in on one specific thing that we could be good at.
Yes, very clear messaging, very like similar target profile for who you're trying to reach. Stacking your marketing. I totally get it. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
And so for you, I want to talk about that like early period, because you mentioned that in the beginning, you know, your goal was to kind of like get into 20 or 30, you know, mom and pop style shops, see how it's going. And the blueprint for that is, you know, from what I hear, quite, you know, it's obvious. You go and knock on everyone's doors, you get people to try your product, you get some orders in and rinse and repeat until you have those 30 stores. But from there, like the 30 stores, how do you get to like 1,000 customers, whether that is directly through the website or whether that is, you know, more retailers? What's that next phase of expansion for you to get to that first 1,000?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you had to summarize.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a great question. And it, you know, it was not linear, you know, it was like up and down. One thing for us, which is specific to our business, is at the time, our products were all perishable. We've expanded our portfolio since then, and that's a little different today. But back then, you know, we had a small selection of products and they were all perishable. So that actually, in some ways, did a little bit of focusing for us in terms of our channel strategy. So we couldn't really sell online because it was a very perishable product we couldn't ship. So that ruled out. Direct consumer was taking off, but we couldn't be part of it because that was not something that fit our product. So we kind of were limited by the distribution that our perishable products enabled us to do, and that really meant focusing on grocery. And so that's what we did. We had our 30 stores of data. It was strong, and we used that data to then try and get the next 100 stores. And for us, the 30 stores, like you said, they were mom and pops. They were independents, maybe a three store chain, but it wasn't more than that.
For us, the kind of next ambition was to be in Whole Foods. It was, you know, a very important natural food store where we could get our products into kind of the 30 to 40 store regional launch and give us the opportunity to really test it at a wider market. And that would have been kind of the 100 store range. So it went from pitching individual stores one by one. The buyers in the store, you walk through the door, you make an appointment, and you physically drop off product, to then trying to get an appointment with Whole Foods corporate and get their attention and get that opportunity. And that was what took us to the 100 doors. And the way that happened is really just a lot of reaching out, a lot of persistence. Finally,
the forager in Whole Foods, there's kind of a forager program where they look to promote locally produced products. And so we learned about this program. You know, we fit the criteria and we met the local forager. And
I still remember that meeting, going to their corporate office.
It's very exciting. We're very nervous. But we were authentic and they were looking for authentic stories. You know, one of the missions of that program was to support local food entrepreneurs. And that's exactly who we were. So we told our authentic story. He liked the taste of the product. He understood the white space that we were operating in, and he didn't have anything that close to it in his stores. So he gave us a chance. And that took us to
the 100 store mark,
but really our first chain. And that gave our brand
and our product legitimacy. And once we had that legitimacy, then suddenly we had a successful case study
in a reputable larger retailer that we could then take to others. And, you know,
that was a billboard for us
to be in Whole Foods, and that credibility and other people seeing it there, that helped open the doors to more conversations with other stores, with other grocery retailers. So that was kind of definitely a tipping point for us.
And is that in parallel where you kind of needed to raise capital? Because I imagine maybe 20 to 30 stores you can maybe manage, you know, on a very lean team, but scaling into 100 is a lot.
Yeah, totally.
And like production changes significantly from being like you making it on the weekends to being like, we need to outsource this.
Yeah, totally. No, you're exactly right. That was almost hand in hand with that wider launch in Whole Foods was the upsizing of our production situation. So we raised some capital and we were doing this kind of in parallel. So we're selling, raising money, producing on the weekends, you know, it was a lot. But it was exciting and we were seeing progress. So we started raising our first small seed round. We were supported by friends and family and a few other investors. But it was enough to get us to that next hurdle of needing a bigger commercial kitchen where we ran production every day that we kind of owned and operated and where we could hire a production manager. Our first big hire was our production manager. I remember meeting another entrepreneur back then, you know, who was a few years ahead of us in the food space. And the biggest piece of advice she gave us is you need to both get yourselves out of the kitchen. If you're really going to scale this, you need to bring in someone who knows how to do that really well so that you could really focus your time and attention to everything else. And that was such an important step for us to take. And we really needed capital in order to do that. So finding that right hire, finding commercial kitchen space that would work for us, that could really allow us to grow for another year and a half, at least. That started to inform, those types of things started to inform how much capital we wanted to raise. And yeah, we were doing these things simultaneously. It wasn't sequential, I would say. So I think that's an important thing to know, because had it been, it would have been very difficult to make progress. But we kind of needed to have confidence that, okay, we need to raise X. We've got 20% of that committed so far, but we don't have time to wait till we have the full 100. We need to keep going and taking steps in this direction. So, you know, there's a leap of faith and confidence that we will continue raising this and we will raise this money while we do all of these things in parallel to secure the space, to secure the hire, et cetera, et cetera. So it was all kind of happening at the same time.
And even more at the same time, I imagine that your marketing is also evolving from being, you know, pounding the pavement, door knocking, to kind of how do we reach more people and get more attention and a spotlight on us. What were you doing marketing-wise? Were you focusing on influencers or PR or paid ads? What was the kind of evolution on that side of things?
Yeah. So this was very bootstrapped, and we needed every, you know, at the time, and even when we had some funding, we needed every dollar to go back into producing the product, working capital, investing in packaging, operating our kitchen. And so at the end of the day, there was very little left to really invest in marketing in a very intentional way. And so it had to be quite bootstrapped and quite grassroots. But I think that that also was an absolute blessing. It gave us an opportunity to try different things and see what worked and see what landed. But it also really added to the authenticity of the brand, which I think was really important. The one thing we knew, and, you know, we knew it to begin with, but it was really evident as we started to grow, was that in a world where you have very few marketing dollars, the best thing to invest in is your product. It's really hard to acquire new customers, but when you do, you want them to be repeat purchasers and you want them to be advocates of your product. You want them to come back. You want them to spread the word. So making sure that the product is right, that the pricing is right, that the packaging is good and friendly and appropriate. Those are really, really important things to invest in. And that's a very, very important part of marketing. That really is stage one, I would say, of kind of what it took for us to be successful. So we invested everything we could in the product. You know, it is the cap. I remember one time we were not happy with the caps. They were hard to open and they were creating some frustration. And we spent time fixing, you know, investing money on fixing the cap to find something that was just like a lot more user friendly, and putting money there instead of putting it somewhere else, because we knew that was a really important part of the experience. So I'd say yes, that in the beginning days, really getting the product right, really getting the brand right, I alluded to this before, but we didn't have cash to put in paid ads or other things. But we did know that once our product lands on the shelf, that's a huge billboard for who we are. A customer takes seconds only, only seconds of attention when they walk in a grocery store. The beverage aisles are particularly busy, and there's so many options and so many colors and so many things going on, so much messaging. How can we use that little bit of real estate that we're going to get no matter what if we get into the store? How can we use that valuable piece of real estate to stand out above all else? And my co-founder had a design background. It was not a CPG design background, but it was a, and it, again, it, that was fantastic because she's not from the industry. So she kind of applied more of her fashion design background with a food lens. And our packaging, which was completely designed internally, led by her, was so simple that it stood out. Where everyone else was shouting about their product, we were telling the customer, this is a very simple, clean product, by the lack of messaging on the packaging and letting that simplicity really stand out. We picked really approachable pastel colors. We had really refined text. And it was an elegant, simple product inside and out. And the packaging really spoke volumes. It got the attention. It encouraged people to try. And the product was good enough that when they tried, they came back. And that was really the beginning of the flywheel that started to work for us. Once we had a little bit of more capital to start to think about more of a comprehensive marketing plan, we leaned in on social media and Instagram in particular, which back then was it was in its infancy in terms of how brands were using it. So it was not focused on paid advertising at the time as much. It was really about community voices, getting recommendations from friends and getting recommendations from kind of the early influencers of the platforms. And we sent our product. We never paid. We couldn't afford to do that. But again, letting the product speak for itself and having confidence in the product, we would send the product to wellness influencers. We'd write to them ourselves as part of kind of, again, the authenticity piece and build a relationship. But if they're interested in receiving some product, we'd send them some and hope that if they liked it, they would share it. And that started to create a little bit of flywheel too. So those two things, the billboards in the store and the kind of authentic grassroots reach out, those are the two things that we kind of leaned on in those early days to start to get the word out.
Do you think that for anyone listening who might be in the food and beverage industry and they're following a similar blueprint because, low kind of budget, bootstrapped, but knowing that the landscape has changed so much with social media, everything is saturated, every influencer is like promoting a million different products. If you were to start this same business tomorrow, again, on a low budget, and you have those kind of, first stores that you've already put in the hard, like pounding the pavement work, where would you kind of, what would you focus on as a channel today?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I still think about this because, even for us, as these platforms have become saturated, it becomes harder to do exactly that. And I think it's even harder if you're brand new, but it's harder even if you're a few years down the road. And I think zooming out from that question, asking yourself, and I think I would ask myself, what's the community that we're trying to build? And what's the most micro version of that? So when you don't have a large platform to reach everyone, how can you find a small platform but really go deep with a micro community? For us, it's wellness, it's women, it's coffee, it's tea, it's mums who need a lot of coffee. and really kind of drilling down to those micro communities. I think that a genuinely great product or service that is suited to a micro community that is solving a real problem will resonate and will break through the noise, even in an increasingly noisier world. And sometimes I think just looking at that landscape and finding those grassroots opportunities to connect with that audience, I think they still exist. And again, going back to the point I made earlier, which is that sometimes having less resources actually is a good thing. When you have a lot of resources, you might choose to do things bigger and broader. When you have these less resources, you take it down to the most simplest form, those three products, that small community, that small geography, whatever it is. And I think that that still exists today. If it's whether it's something in person or online, blogger communities, newsletter communities, in-person wellness events, all of these types of things where there's still connections being made and people are looking for, you know, still great products that suit their lives, I think the opportunity still exists.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Gosh, for anyone in the food and beverage industry, what would your kind of key piece of advice be?
Great question. So many things come to mind, but one is just a little bit more philosophical. And that's every industry is tough, and food and beverage is no different. Margins are tight. They're often perishable. That there's large startup costs sometimes. Like it's a hard road. And one thing that has been really helpful to me, and I think this applies to not just food and beverage, it applies to a lot of different industries, but I know that we wouldn't have got here today if it weren't for this, is just having the support system to kind of get you through the journey. And for me, I had my co-founder, but not just my co-founder. I built a network of people that could help fill in the gaps where I didn't know what I was doing in this industry. Great other founders who had been there and were willing to have a coffee with me. Industry people who probably felt sorry for us and were willing to, you know, listen to, you know, give us some advice, give us an introduction to someone. Whatever that support system, you know, you look at your skill set, you look at the resources you have, and thinking about where the gaps are and figuring out how to supplement those gaps with support. So for me, I had a lot of kind of mental support in having a co-founder. When you're having a bad day, they're having a good day. They pull you through, and vice versa. But then also kind of the knowledge gaps, finding those right people to kind of plug those in. I think that that's really important. It can feel very lonely being an entrepreneur, any kind of entrepreneur, but it doesn't have to be. And I think in today's day, more than ever, there's just so much support out there. If you prioritize creating that support system, that support network, when you're wearing so many hats, that can sometimes take the back seat. But it's something so worth prioritizing, because that's likely the thing that kind of gets you to that next place, is just having that support network to get you there.
Mm, absolutely. For anyone listening, we do have a private network for founders called Magic with a J. You should come and check it out. Shameless plug. Where is the business today? What, like, paint the picture. What has it grown into? How many retailers are you stocked in? You know, who's on the team? What can you shout about? What's coming up?
Yeah, we have a long way to go, but I think that's always the case. But I'm super proud of where we are today. I don't think me 7 years ago would have quite imagined being here. So I think that there's a lot to be proud of. I think there's still a huge way to go, and every day is a new challenge. But I'm very proud of our team. There's 12 of us, which is might sound tiny, but it's a lot more than two of us.
Yeah.
and it speaks a little bit to our culture, because we're a small lean team, and we've just chosen to stay lean as much as we can. We all know each other, we all work together really well, and it really does feel like a family. And so that's kind of culturally something that's been important to us. But yeah, we're 12 people, we're in about 10,000 grocery stores across the US. We're distributed nationally. We have great partnerships with large retailers like Walmart and Whole Foods and Aldi and Sprouts. And still, our bread and butter, which is our amazing early supporters of independent stores that helped us really kind of grow and scale. We have three different product lines now. We started with one, added several SKUs across the journey. Now we have three different product lines. So, you know, you'll find us in lots of different parts of the grocery store. And we're kind of continuing to just scratch the surface. I think that's the exciting thing, is that I touched on this before, but this is a long journey, and you're just constantly hitting the next milestone. And so while I'm super proud of where we are today, there's just so much ahead. And I think that it's exciting to continue on this road. I'm still learning a lot. And now I just have the pleasure of doing it with supported by a group of team members who also have a lot more industry knowledge than I did when I started this show.
I love that for you. Gosh, what a journey. Exciting. At the end of every episode, we ask a series of six quick questions, some of which we might have covered, some of which we might not have, but we ask them all the same. So question number one is, what's your why? Why do you wake up every day and put your energy into Pop and Bottle?
It's really two reasons. I mean, there's more than two, but there's two that kind of really top the list. One is, you know, the North Star for this product and this brand is making a moment in your day a little bit better, a little bit healthier, a little bit more intentional, a little bit more mindful, a little bit more enjoyable. And, you know, us kind of cleaning up the coffee routine, that was the reason we started this. And now the goal is really to kind of make it more accessible. So we don't want it just to be in available to this small cluster of people that can benefit from it. We really believe that access to better, healthier products should be wider and broader. And so the why really is, how do we get this to scale to a point where we can put it in the hands of as many people that choose it? So that's kind of one big driver for why we want to grow the brand. And the second is, for me, it's genuinely still so exciting to be building a brand that feels authentic to us. You know, it's something that we cooked up literally in our little kitchen, our little brainchild, and it's evolved, it's grown, but it still has the essence of, you know, the friendship story that we started with, the problem that we are trying to solve, the community that we were trying to build, the experience that we were trying to create in the world that didn't exist. And just spreading that authentic story through our brand and having it, you know, hopefully impact other people in a positive way, in a small moment of joy. You know, we're not solving a huge problem, but we're solving a small thing that you do every day. That is really exciting to me and encouraging to me, and something that kind of keeps me going on the journey.
I love that. Question number two is, what's been your favorite marketing moment so far?
I think the most substantial for us was just the realization, and I talked about this already, but it was a realization that we could have our product do the work for us, and that our sales and marketing could kind of work hand in hand to grow the brand. And so that first Whole Foods launch that I talked about, and seeing that sales opportunity as a billboard, that was really kind of the piece that helped me understand how powerful that real estate was and is. And how focusing on the distribution was really the marquee moment that we needed to kind of keep us going. It had an organic sell-through once we got it on shelf because of the strength of the products and the brand. And those were the marquee moments that we really kind of decided to go deep in. So that one launch, that was meaningful from a sales perspective, but it was really meaningful from a marketing perspective as well.
Love that. Question number three is, what's your go-to business resource that you can recommend, whether it's a book or a podcast or a newsletter that you're subscribed to?
You know, there's so much content that I love, and I wish I had more time for all of it. But I really do like, so one book I read recently that really resonated for me was Atomic Habits. And, you know, this concept that we really are our habits. And the reason I really love it is because it's so every day. You know, it's when you think about goal setting and you think about milestones and where you want to be, it's so zoomed out, it's almost unachievable. But when you think about your day, you control it, it's your time. And it's just really a collection of habits, a collection of things you do, just a collection of tasks. It's just process. And what I loved about this book is really this idea that you are your habits. Who do you want to manifest? Do you see yourself as a healthy person? If you see yourself as a healthy person, when you're making that next choice, what would a healthy person do? Choose that habit. And suddenly, after doing that habitually or ritualistically for a few days in a row, you're doing the habits of a healthy person. Suddenly you become a healthy person. I think that's really powerful. I love that book. I loved kind of thinking about it with our business in mind, because it's described as habits in the book, but really, you know, the other lens of it is rituals. You know, we're in the business of rituals, a coffee ritual, a tea ritual. And so there's just something cool about you know, you are your rituals. So what rituals do you want to manifest? And, you know, how do you make your life a little bit more, how do you go where you want to go by changing the rituals in your life?
This is a great segue into question number four, which is how do you win the day and what are your rituals and habits that keep you feeling happy and successful and motivated?
At this stage of my life, this is kind of the most powerful way of winning the day is by saying no. And sometimes the measure of a successful day for me is how many things did I say no to today? The reason I say that is because our time is just the most valuable resource that we have. And there are so many opportunities to say yes to so many things, you know, whether it's a retail opportunity, but maybe it doesn't make sense, whether it's a meeting that you love to do, but it just isn't the right priority for that day. Prioritization and what to say yes to and what to say no to is just so key to getting to where you want to go. And for me, it's really hard. I love to say yes to people. It's really hard to say no. And that's just a culture of training that I've had to build inside of me and I'm still working on today. But yeah, I think a successful day for me is one where I've set some boundaries. I've made some decisions on prioritization and I've said no to a bunch of things that were hard to say no to.
God, I really resonate with that. I need to be better at boundaries. Question number five is, what's been your worst money mistake in building the business and how much did it cost you?
Ooh, okay.
We've had some real doozies, so feel free to share.
So many things. We've definitely done things that just weren't the right time. I think we invested in PR at a stage, you know, here's one example, it might not be the most exciting, but we invested in PR, expensive PR at one point at a stage where it just didn't make any sense for us as a business because we had no distribution. So it was something that we absolutely should do and would have been fantastic to do. But when you're so tiny and national PR doesn't make sense because nobody in the other part of the country can find your product and you don't sell online, it was just kind of the wrong prioritization at the wrong time. And so while it was very worthwhile at the right time, it was not worthwhile at the wrong time. So that would be one example.
And I think that's such an important one, especially for PR, because PR, you can also get really caught up in the ego of wanting to see yourself. But then if it's not really driving meaningful results, it really can be a money waster. And it can also just be a money waster if you have, you know, you hire the wrong people to help you with that piece as well. So yeah, great, great bit of learning there. And question number six, last question, what is just a crazy story you can share from building your business that is good, bad, or ugly?
Let's see. There's definitely been some ugly moments. I have a really ugly one actually that I can share, which I will never forget. Everyone survived. No one was hurt. Everyone survived. So we live to tell the tale. This is probably in the first year or 18 months of our business. We had this beautiful branded refrigerated van. It had pop and bottle on it. We'd see it drive on the highway. It was exciting. And it was our delivery van. And it would track products up and down California. And I got a call early morning one day from our driver who, when I answered the call, I thought it was April Fool's because I just couldn't believe what he was telling me. He gave me a call and he said, "Hey, I'm on the side of the highway. I just pulled up and the van is in flames." I thought he was joking until he sent me pictures to my phone of our pop and bottle. We thought, oh my God, is this a metaphor for what's going to happen with our business? Our beautiful black van with pop and bottle branding up in flames, the logo up in flames, the brand up in flames, all the product inside it up in flames. It was dealt with, everyone was safe,
but we drove out to
kind of look at our vehicle that we poured money into, that we got branded. And it was just a very low moment. It was all our product for a week of sales. it was this vehicle that we didn't have another one. This was our only one. And suddenly it was a huge setback in the business. We didn't have any product. We'd lost our vehicle. It was like so stabilizing at the time. And it was just one of those moments where you're like, well, do we have a business tomorrow? Because we just lost a ton of stuff. We had to go through an insurance claim that was not easy. It was just a crazy time. But it was one of those moments when you realize that you have so much strength inside you, you know, and you figure it out. You throw problems and you figure out a rental, a late night production session, calling our retailers to explain what happened, asking for some extra time to deliver, and we figured it out. But yeah, it was an ugly moment.
That is full on. Oh my God. Wow. Yeah, that's a crazy one. That's a crazy story. Oh my gosh. Jash, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with Pop and Bottle and sharing all the learnings and the crazy stories. Gosh, I'm like in awe of what you've built. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been super fun to talk to you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, it's Dune here. Thanks for listening to this amazing episode of the Female Startup Club podcast. If you're a fan of the show and want even more of the good stuff, I'd recommend checking out femalestartupclub.com, where you can subscribe to our free newsletter. We send it out weekly, covering female-founded business news, insights and learnings in D2C, and interesting business resources. And if you're a founder building an e-commerce brand, you can join our private network of entrepreneurs called Hype Club at femalestartupclub.com/Hype Club. We have guests from the show joining us for intimate Ask Me Anythings, expert workshops, and a group of totally amazing, like-minded women building the future of D2C brands. As always, please do subscribe, rate and review the show, and post your favorite episodes to Instagram stories. I am beyond grateful when you do that.